1995 crime opus directed by Michael Mann, starring two of America's greatest actors, Robert De Niro, Al Pacino. One's a cop, one's a crook. They're evenly matched. It's a cat and mouse chase. I mean, what more do I need to say?
And that was Blake Howard, a film critic in Sydney, Australia, describing the movie Heat. And I'm Mark Olson. For this week's episode of The Real, I wanted to talk with Blake because he's the host and creator of the podcast One Heat Minute, which has led listeners through Heat 1 minute at a time, with a mix of obsession and enthusiasm and a list of guests that now includes filmmaker Michael Mann himself. And stay tuned for the end of the show, when we'll have a little of Blake's interview with Michael Mann. Blake, why this movie? What is it for you about Michael Mann's Heat that makes it worthy of this level of attention?
I guess I'll just synthesize it with, you know, when I was young, I suppose anyone who's around my age, I'm 34, I caught this in my teens first time. And in Australia, I never caught it at the theater. I actually wasn't old enough to go and catch it on theater by myself. I caught it on VHS about 1997. And when I saw it, I thought it was amazing. I thought it was cool. I thought it was muscular action. And I kept revisiting it over and over again. As it happens in college or university, as it were, in Australia, you sort of abandon what you think is all the cool things of your youth and you become a snob for a brief period of time. I don't know if you had that experience. And you watch European art cinema and non-English language things, or you go back to like the 30s and you sort of examine a lot of classics. But one film that sort of overcame my snobbery was Heat. I could watch it and marvel at it for just its formal craft, for being completely in touch and overt and metaphorical about its philosophies and its themes, as it was interested in, you know, the emotional truth of telling a story, like a fun and interesting story. So it's just hung around forever. And I much think that in a world of content, we've got things like Netflix and Hulu, and we're streaming the living daylights out of everything. There's a lot of stuff that's great, and there's a lot of stuff that sucks. And whenever I see something that sucks, the thing that always satiates me is Heat. And so it became this thing that if I watched a bad movie at the cinema that I had to file a review for as a freelance film critic, I would come home and put Heat on to reinvigorate my love of cinema. And then this project sort of was born out of this like enduring and rewatchable love that I had with the film. I just think it's utterly, staggeringly brilliant.
And now, have you found that the process of undertaking this project, have your feelings changed about the movie?
No, they've only grown scarily. I love it more. I love it more in two really weird ways. The first is, especially at the beginning, it was, when you have a discourse, like everyone who loves movies loves to talk about movies with their friends. And the coolest thing about watching a movie and being able to catch up and having that communal experience, or a TV show, is, you know, sometimes people have a totally different take. They can love it, but it's just a completely different kind of love, a completely different thing that resonates, a completely different re-emphasis of everything that's happening. And what this show has done is essentially organized for me an approach where I could take my favorite thing ever and talk to some of the most wonderful critical minds, creators, historians, university lecturers, policemen, anyone that I could find that I thought would have a great take on the movie, whether it was a positive or a negative one. I feel like I've got, you know, one of the most incredible rosters of people that I could have ever spoken to. And also just friends to have fun with it, because ultimately that's what we wanted. We wanted to scrutinize the living daylights out of this movie, but never forget that, you know, we love it and we want to have fun talking about it, because that's what is fun about talking about your favorite things.
In the process of doing the show, you've kind of really expanded who could be on the show. That, you know, it started out with mostly people it seemed like that you knew, that were sort of critic friends from there in Australia. And then you started getting some international guests. You had Nick James, the editor of Sight and Sound magazine, who wrote a monograph on the movie Heat. You had other critics from America. But then also you had someone from a suicide prevention center. You spoke to an undercover cop. And you did begin to expand to talking to Dante Spinotti, the cinematographer from the movie, and people who were actually involved in the making of the movie. How did you find that guest list kind of could expand as you were going over the course of doing this 170 some episodes.
It's what's so strange, Mark. In my wildest dreams, I had a list of some of those people that you just talked about. Nick James's monograph on Heat. At university, I was doing a thesis on Michael Mann, and at the time, so I was reading a lot of critical theory about cinema, and it's very dense stuff. And so what I would periodically do is I'd read Nick James's book. So those people like Nick James were all on a list of people that I would love to talk to, but I just have to credit that something about this film and something about the approach of the show attracted some just unbelievably generous and incredible people. So one of the first people that was on the show, or a wonderful guy called Oscar Hillstrom in Australia, who I knew, who puts me onto a bunch of people. Another guy, Lee Zachariah, who runs the incredible Australian podcast Hell Is for Hyphenates, passed me onto a stack of people. Joe Lynch, the incredible indie filmmaker and podcaster himself, discovered the show and then just talked about it to everyone because he too is completely obsessed with Heat. And so what happened was I just had this blooming list of people that did the show and always had someone else that they spoke to Heat about, or someone else that they knew was a huge Michael Mann fan. So what happened, it was just this beautiful, perfect network I could ever describe, like completely organic. And it's just started to grow and grow and grow. And then the roster just filled itself. You know, these amazing people put me onto two or three or four more people. And often I would research them and then say, yep, let's do it. Sounds like a great person to talk to. And for those other people that you mentioned, the undercover police officer, suicide prevention, it was always about trying to have some variety because I just was really mindful that I wanted it to be fresh. Like I just wanted occasionally to surprise and to shock people that who we'd get. And so when certain moments approached, I thought, you know, I just sort of went with my gut and said, there's something in this if I talk to someone who's unexpected. And so I always kept that approach going the entire time.
And then would you ever have expected that it's gotten you the attention that it has?
No, absolutely not. No, I was totally doing this for me and my friends at the time who really supported me in the opening of the show, Stu Coote, Garth Franklin, Luke Buckmaster, who you would have heard, you know, Australian film critical voices. When we talked about it, they were my buddies. They knew that Heat was my obsession. I'd written about it many times. And so they just thought, if anyone's got the passion to make it work, it's me. So I have to thank them for their faith and support. And, you know, when I speak to my nearest and dearest, they all know how close this movie is to my heart. So they thought that it would always go. But I think I've been completely flabbergasted. Like I'm talking to you right now about this entire project. And it's exciting. It's kind of unbelievable. And I'm really proud, but I'm also deeply moved because the entire project has just brought this community of people who love movies like I love movies around me. And it's really been special.
And now I don't know exactly at what point in the podcast you first mentioned it, but it was something I noticed that throughout the episodes that I've heard, and I confess I've not listened to every single one, that you would mention...
I don't blame you. There's a lot.
You would mention, oh, if we could get Michael Mann on, or oh, if I ever talked to Michael Mann. And at first you're saying it kind of like a wish or almost a little bit of a joke, like, yeah, that's never going to happen. And at what point did that kind of become a possibility? Did you realize that the podcast was becoming sort of serious enough and getting enough attention that that's something that could maybe actually happen?
Well, it sort of happened in two phases. The first one was around 60 or so episodes in, I spoke to a man called Mike Bard, who's the head of Universal Studios Australasia. So Michael Mann has worked with Universal, particularly with Public Enemies, and then eventually Black Hat. And I did an interview with Mike, who is an avid Heat fan. He's an expat South African Australian. And he was a really gregarious and fun guy. And at the time, Mike was kind enough to sort of reach out to some of his contacts and say, look, who's the best person for Blake legitimately to talk to attempt to contact Michael Mann? Because, you know, there was always the hope that if Michael Mann heard about the show, he'd be interested in doing an episode. And so at that time, it became more serious. But it was like still a long time of going through and attempting to access, you imagine, with a filmmaker like Michael and just huge, influential, iconic filmmakers like your Tarantinos of the world and your Coppolas of the world, your Scorsese of the world, they're not easy to get in touch with for just a random interview or especially a podcast because there's lots. And so I spent a long time there, and that was almost a year ago that first started happening. And it wasn't really until the incredible Bilge Ibiri, actually, who, you know, used to write for The Village Voice and now writes for New York Magazine and Vulture. He came on the show and was a fan of the show and then said the first thing, which was the best thing, which is, I'm going to see Michael Mann in person in 2 weeks. He messaged me and said, Blake, I'm going to see Michael Mann in 2 weeks doing an interview about his upcoming book label called Michael Mann Books and the first book of their by written by Elaine Shannon called Hunting LaRue. And when I see him, as we're sitting down chit-chatting, I'm going to ask him if he's heard about your show. And that was really when I knew after Bilger spoke to Michael Mann and Michael Mann, as you being one of the first people in the whole world to have heard it, when he found out about it, he was tickled by the prospect of someone examining his film, which is 2 hours and 45 minutes without credits. He was tickled by the prospect of someone giving it this level of scrutiny. And so at that time, it kind of became real. But that was 4 or 5 months ago now. And it still didn't seem like it was going to be possible because he's a creator and he works a lot. And then it just built up. And, you know, only a week ago, it actually happened.
And tell me about the experience of that. What was it like for you after all this time, all this attention that you've given to the movie to finally have him available to you and to be able to talk to him and ask him questions? Just what was that experience like?
Completely surreal. It was a surreal experience, one which I feel like I had several out-of-body experiences at the time. I know that's sort of strange to say, but I want to ask you, Mark, like there are times where you do plenty of interviews for the real and in your job. There are sometimes you feel really prepared to talk to someone. And in those moments, you always feel more confident, right? Mm-hmm. You feel like, oh, I can do this interview on my ear. Imagine I've watched Heat conservatively 250 times. Like I'm just going to say conservatively because during this project, for every minute I watch it, the 20 minutes around it multiple times in preparation for every show. So I've watched this film in weird and protracted ways many times. And also, I've spoken to so many people about this movie, including people, intimate creatives with Michael. You know, may he rest in peace, Mr. Pascal Buber, one of the editors of Heat in the editing team, because there were four key, huge editors and 24-hour editing teams on Heat. I've spoken to Dante Spinotti, one of the greatest cinematographers who's ever lived, who's worked with Michael on some of his, you know, most amazing projects and an Oscar nominee multiple times. And I felt like so ready to talk to him that it was like it was very easy to talk to him. But at the same time, and this is what I can't wait for people to listen to, it was wonderful to talk to Michael because there were things that he said about Heat and about the show, about the production, about the preparation, and about his goals and outlook for this movie that I just don't think have ever been heard anywhere else. And so in those moments where I was hearing things as a person who's researched this movie, who's essentially read every interview that he's ever given about it, read every book that is available on it, I was hearing things, some of these things for the first time. And in those moments, I was having micro out-of-body moments going, wow, I literally am just bursting at the seams to share this with the listeners of this show.
Well, I have to say, and I have had a chance to hear your interview with Michael Mann, that I think in some ways the format of the show did you a huge bonus in that he is someone who is so focused and can talk about things down to the minutest of details that, you know, yes, talking in very specifically about the ending of the movie, the last scene of the movie, I think kind of kept it kept him focused in a great way and just brought out, as you said, a lot that I know I had never really heard him say before. And so I think it was funny that he seemed to like fit so well for the format of the show.
Yeah, he says something in a special recording I had him do for one of the last recordings of the show, the live One Heat Minute that I recorded at the most recent Sydney Film Festival. I asked Michael at the end of the interview if he could record me just an introduction. And at the end of that, he says, I compliment your obsessions. And I think that it was a really wonderful compliment because he's an obsessive filmmaker. He makes films about obsessive characters, and here we are in this obsessive project. And I just think it synced. It just synced perfectly. I was very happy in that moment. It was like us having a cup of coffee in the middle of Heat, talking like just a couple of regular fellas.
One thing that was a huge sort of selling point for the movie when it first came out is that the central scene of the movie when Pacino and De Niro are on screen together had previously both been in The Godfather 2, but this was actually the first time they had scenes together in a movie.
That was the banner. Pacino, De Niro together for the first time. And people had always had a Pacino just like that had a De Niro, much like people have a Coke or a Pepsi. There was always one brand that was more yours, and to see them go toe-to-toe, these two guys had been from the same town, operating in a lot of the same genres, working with some of the most amazing filmmakers in the world, and particularly being in one of the most beloved American films of all time, The Godfather Part II. The collective weight of those two huge stars right at the peak of their powers coming together was the massive selling point of this movie.
And as well, to see filmmaker Michael Mann, you know, who had been known for being a executive producer on the television show Miami Vice, but then had also directed the film Thief. He, at this point, had had his biggest box office success with The Last of the Mohicans. He was really kind of like on the ascendant. He was really at the peak of his powers. And so to have him be the person who was bringing these two actors together, you can't think of like three people that would go together better than Mann, Pacino, and De Niro.
No. Never again. It's almost like the Pacino, and Pacino's had his relationships with wonderful directors before, just like De Niro in the Scorsese relationship. But these three guys at the same time, and like you said, Miami Vice, crime story, and commanding the huge epic that really was Last of the Mohicans, coming off of all those three things. The prestige was right. The content was right. That sort of East Coast smashing together with the West Coast, that is, because these are New York guys, Mann is a Chicagoan, and it's in LA, and it's just this synthesis of all these awesome things coming together.
And now that the project is over, are you going to turn to another Michael Mann film to cover some other filmmaker in some way? I think we've seen this a lot recently with sort of like the content industry that sprung up around Game of Thrones. So there's a lot of people who are making Game of Thrones content, and then they don't know what to do now that Game of Thrones is over. And are you feeling that same way about One Heat Minute? What do you want to do next with the audience that you've grown, with your own skills and confidence as a podcaster? Like, what's next?
There's a couple of projects that are coming up. On the idea of a Michael Mann one first, let me answer that first definitively. I'll never do another Michael Mann movie. It just won't happen. I just feel like if I've contributed to the canon of this film, then I feel extremely proud and I'm going to let it go. There is someone out there who's Manhunter, who Thief, who Jericho Mile, who Miami Vice, who Ali, who The Insider, that are as equally obsessed with me and have a real take on it and feel like they've got a scrutiny and they want to tackle it. And I've always said, I think throughout the show, if anyone's doing another Minute by Minute Michael Mann podcast, I'd love to be a guest to chat. But there's no way I'm going to do it. As far as the other stuff, thank you so much for that wonderful compliment. Yeah, there's a couple of other projects that I've got on the boil. One of them I really particularly want to pursue, and I can't say too much about it right now because it's very much in the development stage and it's just us trying to work out some pitches with certain providers before I'm able to sort of share. Not a Minute by Minute podcast, certainly, but something that hopefully really fits some of the audience that I've built with One Heat Minute. The next iterations of what I'm doing, I'll make sure I shout out and share on our One Heat Minute thread.
Oh, terrific. And now I want to be sure to ask, have you sat down and watched the movie in its entirety since you finished the podcast? Like, do you feel like you need a breather from it? Or when do you think you'll be able to watch the movie again?
I haven't watched it since interviewing Michael Mann, but I think absolutely we'll watch it. And I'll probably watch it the evening of the 6th of the July in Sydney. So it'll be the 5th in the States, potentially the day that this is released. I'll watch the film then. I'm totally fine to go back to it. What is really weird though, Mark, and I don't know if all listeners have this same experience, but what is really weird for me is now when I watch the films, I hear all the voices of the people I've spoken to while I'm listening. It's like a commentary track that is happening subconsciously in my mind. Like I hear the great takes and I hear the insightful moments and I hear the voices of all the people I spoke to. I hear Manolo Dargis talk about Pacino looking like Garbo. And I hear Bilge Ibiri talking about if all cinema was lost, they should just show them the scene where Ashley Judd does the gesture and that would be it. I hear Nick James like literally quoting every single movement and gesture in De Niro's face as it goes past. I hear the Australian Federal Police officer I spoke to say, you know, I would pinch them now and put them in prison for 6 months, even though it would end the movie. You know, I hear those things. It's such a weird thing. But I'm going to watch this again. I haven't loved the movie any less. I'm going to still watch it. Definitely. Maybe not with the same level of frequency that I used to, but yeah, it's not something that's going to get shelved and put away forever yet.
Well, I have to say, just for myself, I find that I think one of the greatest achievements of the show is that it always drives me back to the movie. When I listen to episodes, my first impulse is to always want to go back and not just rewatch that minute, but to really go back and just rewatch the movie. And I think it's something that it says a lot about your enthusiasm and the people that you've brought on and the conversations that you've been having, that you've never lost sight of that, that it always, that's always been sort of like the paramount thing with the show, is it's always kind of pushing you back to the object, back to actually watching the movie.
I thank you for that. I'm glad. As I said, imagine every single minute of every single episode, I usually watch 10 minutes before, 10 minutes after that minute, before I talk to the person I'm talking to. I keep being driven back to it myself. I see things completely differently. Sometimes minute by minute, if I talk to a great people and they have an amazing take and it's influenced by what's happened in preceding moments of the movie, I want to go back and see it. I want to wrestle with it. And so, yeah, I love that people are going back to Heat and watching Heat again.
I work for the Los Angeles Times. Our offices were just around the corner from Aviation Boulevard. I'm barely a mile from the field where the last scene of the movie takes place. And I want to ask you, I don't know if you've ever actually been to Los Angeles, but I want to just get your impressions of the city as defined by the movie, because this is seen now as one of the definitive Los Angeles crime films. And I'm wondering what that kind of means to you.
Yeah, I have been to LA. I came when I was very young, like, and spent a chunk of time there, and I've been in transit through LA to other places. For me, it's much like, you know, people talk about Sydney and LA being similar as far as a sprawl. And so similarly with LA, there's this view that there's all these views of LA as like just pure popcorn Hollywood movies, and then there's Heat. And so I think Heat is just addressing that thing that in this massive urban sprawl, there's decay, there's like there's freeways, there's these, you know, I think even in the final episode, Michael Mann talks about these, you know, these arteries of cars and flying through and all around. And there are just these completely different ecosystems that if you travel along these concrete tributaries of LA that you're going to find. And so my view of LA from Heat is that there's just so much more than, you know, Rodeo Drive. Like it gives me so much more of a sense of sprawl, of isolation. And I think that that fits with the characters, because these people are alone in a lot of ways and they can feel lonely. And so, yeah, I think it just sort of heightens that feeling of like, yes, in these massive cities, there's so many people and the population of LA is nearly more than the population of Australia. But it gives me the sense that it's not like a New York City where you're on top of each other and there seems to be a community. It feels like there's just more isolation there. So, you know, maybe 1995 is a much more different world than it is now in 2019. But I always found that was like a little bit of respite and reprieve with LA, because you can find spaces that there's isolation, and that's all where criminals want to hide, is all those isolated, discarded places in LA.
Well, Blake Howard, I thank you for taking some time to talk with us today. And again, congratulations to you on the finishing of the podcast.
Mark, thank you so much. And thank you for shouting out One Heat Minute. It's hugely appreciated. And Mark, I have to ask you, if I do come to LA in the next little while, I'd love to hook up, because I'd love to even just to swing past your office to take a look at the field. That's like sacred ground for me. So Mark, for your listeners, here's a little teaser of Michael Mann's upcoming appearance on One Heat Minute.
For the actors, working with the actors, it was kind of like an ensemble. And Sean Voight would show up on a day off because he wanted to see what Bob and Al were going to do in a scene that they might have had together. And Krisha Herless wanted to see, you know, a dialogue scene with Bob and Sean Voight as Nate. And that was the feeling about it. We all felt that we were working, and it was great work, and we're all working. I wouldn't say hard, because it was hard work, but it doesn't mean anything. I mean, it just felt like, man, I don't want to be anywhere else on the planet Earth right now at this moment in time than on this set making this movie. You
know. I reckon that's the money.
That's great. And I love when he accidentally refers to Val Kilmer by his character name.
It was Krisha Herless. Yeah, I wasn't going to jump in there, just so you know.
Yeah,
I wasn't going to jump.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, well, I've known him as Krisha Herless for the last 2 years, so that's all good for me.
Well, that's terrific. Blake, again, thank you so much for taking some time to talk with us, and certainly thanks for sharing with me the interview. You know, I've interviewed Michael Mann twice, I think, and he's so much different with you than I've ever heard him before. I mean, I don't know. I think it's there's just something about the project, and I think about him, you know, the passage of time. Like I've never heard him talk like that before.
Oh man, that's really flattering, Mark. That's insane. I've It was the perfect alignment of stars.
Well, great. Well, again, thank you so much. And I'm sure we're going to be in touch again soon.
Can't wait to chat soon. All right. Take care. Thank you very much, guys. My guest today is the only guest on the entire series whose name appears in the minute that they're here to talk about. It is with great pleasure and honor. it's just absolutely insane that this is happening. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the amazing auteur behind this incredible opus, Michael Mann. Michael Mann, welcome to One Heat Minute.
And that's it for The Real this week. I'm Mark Olson. Thanks to our producer, Katie Cooper, our engineer, Mike Heflin, and LA Times Studios. Listen to The Real on Apple, Spotify, at latimes.com/podcasts, or wherever you get your audio. If you like what you hear, please give us a 5-star review. We'll see you next week.